Why don't you do an introduction?
Okay. All right. So I'm Shinran Mark. I've been with All Beings for at least 10 years. I started meditating 45 years ago when I was 19 years old. Mm-hmm. And when I was around 40, I wanted to broaden my practice. And so I joined Charlotte Joko Beck, an everyday Zen group out in San Diego. And then started here 10 or 11 years ago. So I'm president of the board at All Beings. And I really treasure the Sangha. It's a big part of my life. The very strong connections we feel. So I want to begin by thanking Inryu Sensei. And Koryu, all our ancestors, past, present, and future. And thanks to you all for sharing your time and practice today. Very nice to see everybody's faces. So what I'd like to talk about is bringing the suffering of others to our practice. Typically, we focus on our own suffering, but I'm in a personal situation now where have to deal every day with the suffering of a beloved, and that that's posing some challenges for me. And so this Dharma talk is a way through working through some of those challenges and bringing the Dharma together more closely into my life. Now, just looking at the papers this morning, there's news of the suffering of others. The Omicron virus is quickly spreading. The country's a little protection. We're pretty sure that this new variant will lead to more cases, will probably affect our lives with yet another wave of the virus. And it's easy, and in this case, to feel helpless and frustrated, not only with ourselves and our reactions to what's going on, but seeing all that suffering out there, not being able to do anything about it. And there's all sorts of news about other forms of suffering, systemic racism, other forms of oppression. Just walking down the street in Adams Morgan, I see homeless people, and I have a reaction to that. So the suffering is really all around us. And the question is, how do we bring that suffering into our practice? Or how do we bring our practice to that suffering? And how do we deal with it in a skillful way, a life-affirming way? Now, for me these days, the main challenge is my son, who has some health problems. So he's been at home now for more than a year, on medical leave from school. And the problems are not life-threatening, but they're chronic, and they haven't gone away. We haven't really figured out a way to diagnose and treat, you know, the issues. So this is really, as you can imagine, the suffering that I'm trying to deal with right now, that I'm grappling with right now. So of course, his situation has a big impact on my life and the life of my wife. So right now, it's the three of us living here. And it raises all sorts of emotions with me. And this is the main challenge. I feel guilt, I feel shame. I certainly feel very helpless. And more than anything else, I want him to be healthy. I want him to go back to normal and live the normal life of a teenage boy. And then sometimes, to be honest, I feel sorry for myself. You know, why is this happening to me, and how it affects my life and shapes, you know, all the facets of my life. So I've been turning to the Dharma and trying to draw on the wisdom in a way that I can use to reconcile what's going on. with peace, right? And with wisdom and with compassion. Now, how can I bring this all together? I mean, that's my challenge. So how can I bring my practice to alleviate Maury's suffering? That's the immediate question. And one big challenge to this is the kind of day-to-day aspect of the situation. A little while ago, I read Pema Chodron's great book, When Things Fall Apart. And there, she's talking about like big one-off disasters, you know, like your husband leaves you or somebody close to you dies. And she talks about how that can lead to an incredible moment of clarity. And I've experienced that, and I that resonates with me. But the situation I'm in now is more kind of day to day, hour to hour. So it's not a one-off event that I can reflect on and come to terms with, but goes on every day for a long time now. And so it does cloud my thoughts. It does bring me away from myself and lead to a lot of conflict, a lot of inner conflict. So one wisdom from the Dharma is that all our suffering comes from attachment and clinging. So I reflect on that as a parent. And I guess my initial thought to this is, well, yeah, I am very attached to Maury. He's my son. I love him. And, my facile response is, well, how can I not be attached to him? How could it be otherwise? And I know full well that I'm attached to parenting in ways skillful and unskillful. And I think maybe one, as I think about it, one facet of this struggle of mine is to separate the skillful from the unskillful, right, forms of attachment. I want my kids to be happy. I want to be able to give them the gifts that my parents gave me without the bad things that my parents gave me. That's one way in which I've always framed it, being a father. So if you look at it as delusions, I definitely manifest a delusion that Maury will always be okay and that I am the perfect parent, right? I always start out that way, but maybe it's not the case. An example of that is last Sunday, I dropped off my oldest son to college up in Philadelphia. He's a freshman and he came home, you know, for Thanksgiving break. And I was very sad after the visit. And I noticed that I felt sad during the visit over the weekend. And that, I think, was an unhealthy form of attachment. I mean, I couldn't be completely present in his presence because I was anticipating him leaving. So that was kind of an example of how it all gets mixed up. And then, you know, I feel bad about not being fully present. You get into the spiral. Another instruction from the Dharma is to look at each of our problems as a gift. The idea that we cannot deepen our practice without new challenges and only difficult circumstances afford us with the opportunity to grow. But again, you know, my initial reaction to that isn't very positive. You know, how can I see my son's health problems as posing an opportunity, right? How can I see that as being in any positive in any respect? So I have a hard time with that. Another piece of wisdom from the Dharma is to, and I'm not using maybe the right words, but this is how I experience it, is separating the trigger from the response, right? And that feels a little more familiar to me. And I feel a little more comfortable with that. The trigger is Maury's sickness, his ill health. And what kind of responses do I have? I feel guilty, I feel ashamed that I'm separating myself from Maury. And it's a very clear trigger for me. So my reaction to that trigger is to feel certain feelings and then not feel very calm and not be able to be not in a position to act constructively to help the matter practically. And I think that comes down to my attachment to being a good parent, and that I'm a very good parent, and Maury's suffering immediately is evidence that I'm a bad parent, and that I react to that. But I feel that awareness of the trigger and the response is a great way to move forward in a constructive way, in a compassionate way. There's so many opportunities in which I get triggered, and I can work with when the same situation happens again and again. I can work on my reaction. I can work on my response. You know, there's a saying by Jeffrey Frankl that freedom is found in the space between the trigger and the response. Freedom is found in the space between the trigger and the response. And that has been my experience, that when I get triggered, I try to increase that space, widen the gap between the trigger and the response. And in that sense, it is an opportunity. It is an opportunity. And that to me feels more comfortable. Another piece of wisdom from the Dharma is about embodiment and how we embody the triggers in our life or the difficulties in our life. And that one really resonates with me. What I try to do is, in a stressful situation, is to initially, first and foremost, maintain good posture. So right now I can put my feet a little bit flatter on the floor and bring myself upright a little bit. And I find that's very helpful to deal with the trigger, to allow the blood to flow to my head, to make better decisions. And it's something I can always do anytime, any place, and always get into that good posture. When I do get triggered, my heart beats, my palms heat up, my shoulders tense, my jaw tenses, I lean forward. That good posture takes care of all that to a large degree. And then I shift my attention to the weight of my feet on the floor. And that's also something that always works for me. And shift my attention to the weight of my body on the chair, the weight of my shoulders, the weight of my head on my shoulders. That also works well for me. And I think the good posture works on two levels. One is just the physiological, and the second is maybe psychological, in that I know I'm doing something good for myself. I know I'm doing something good for the situation. It's very concrete, very clear. So just bring that really positive intention to the situation, bring something over and above the physicality of it. And hopefully when I get into the good posture, I set the stage for self-compassion. And that's something something is emphasized in the Dharma, and I think more so in recent years in writings of teachers, that we really can't be compassionate for anybody else unless we're compassionate for ourselves. I just can't respond skillfully to the situation while beating myself up. And it's not gonna happen. And I've brought self-compassion several times to the Sangha. I think I gave a talk on this a couple of years ago, and then a tea a couple of months ago. This is a big preoccupation with me, is the self-compassion. And it's something I think everybody feels, especially in our society, which doesn't encourage a lot of self-compassion. That's not the way the capitalist system works. And it's curious, even as I bring it up, I feel a tang of guilt in that the compassion should be directed first and foremost to Maury or to other members of my family. But I think deep down, I know I've got to start with myself. I've got to start with myself, my own mind. And to maintain the self-compassion in that space between the trigger and the response means holding on to my suffering. It means not running away from it, being able to live inside my suffering. And that, of course, is very difficult for us. Typically, once we start, or I'll speak for myself, once I start suffering, I react quickly, and then the situation isn't going to turn out very positively. So what I have learned over the years is to try to lean into the suffering. And it's hard to do with other people. It's easier when I'm by myself, but to not run away from it, but to actually open up to it and even befriend it. Take it out to tea, as Emily Dickinson would say. And that's something that I think comes with maturity, comes with having suffered a lot, right? You know, life teaches little lessons, and this is one, that the more we can stay with it, then the better things will turn out. So this helps me stay calm, and again, helps me in the situation, helps the practicality of the situation. Another thing I've been working on with Maury in other situations is a form of Tonglen. So if I'm in a, if I'm with somebody who's suffering, I will calm myself down, get in some good posture, and then picture an energy, sort of a circle of energy, sending out my chi to the other person and other people in the room. And I visualize a circle of light between all of us. When I do that, something definitely changes in the room. Something definitely changes. And I feel a stronger presence. I feel all of us are, all of us together dealing with our problems is one. There's another Tonglen instruction of breathing in the suffering of the other person and breathing out your love. And that I try to do too. If I'm agitated, I just work on the circle of energy part. I can't do that second one, but if I'm fairly settled, I can do that, breathing in the suffering, breathing out the love. I find that very satisfying. So as I went through the notes of speaking today, I kind of came up with the insight of how important embodiment of suffering is. You know, that's starting with the good posture, maintaining the good posture, feeling how the suffering is in our bodies. The bodies never lie. And that's really kind of the very simple lesson that I've taken away from this is for each breath in our life, we have our body to serve as an anchor and to serve as a wellspring of compassion. And it's something we can always work on, always maintain and use as a gift to bring to ourselves and to others. So that's my punchline here is just the body and what we can do with the body to bring the practice of suffering and the suffering of practice.
Stop the recording and then you can have questions or dialogue. Is that okay, Shinrin?
Yes, please.
Okay.